order to see whatever's going on. See if the local recording or whatever. I also restarted some stuff just to avoid reinstalling my computer. My blood pressure's high enough.
I mean, the actual answer is, you know, are you actually going to overlay only your voice again onto the Craig recording?
I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to try something.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying.
I'm just tired. I'm tired.
Perfect audio quality isn't going to fix your life, you know? Like,
no. But I really need to know why that distortion's happening in order to figure out how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, you know, I can try this, right? I can try something.
Totally, yeah. I'm not discouraging. That's not... I'm just, you know, I want to make sure you're not, like, killing yourself over a 5% improvement, you know? Well, 5% might be worth it, but 1% improvement.
Almost like we have 400 episodes worth of content.
Yeah, well, the problem is it's episode 400 of We Were Gamers, and I have no idea what we... Oh, God. 400, and I still can't get it out of my mouth. It's episode 400 of We Were Gamers. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Andy. How you doing?
Good. Hi, JJ.
Hey, how's it going?
400 times, man. Mans? Men's? Cohorts?
It's a lot of times.
400 times. Well, that doesn't even include the side pods. It's been a ride, man. We didn't prepare anything for the 400th episode, so
yes. But you know what you know what we should do to start, because we haven't done it in a hot minute, is shout out our theme music.
Oh, yes. Marley.
Yes. A true pro. Thank you for composing our theme, intro and outro here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Podcasts at We Were Gamers. If you need Marley's contact for doing music or something, maybe I can hook you up. Marley, thank you.
We democratically salute you.
We want to start with Helldivers? Is that what you're saying? Episode
400? I guess we
do now. Can we start with Helldivers? Is that the first question?
We're allowed to, again, Michael, after Steam has issued hundreds, maybe thousands of refunds. They walked it back. Do you know what I'm talking about? Otherwise, JJ's gonna explain.
I have heard bits and pieces, but put it all together for me.
The gamers have won.
Democracy victory.
Yeah, democracy has spoken.
So instead of reverting a change, they're just not gonna do a change at all.
Gee. Go figure.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the people who didn't, I think, did we talk about this last week?
No, we talked about it in chat, and that was about
it. Okay. So, unclear how this process started, but it sounds like, according to the Helldivers 2 developers, they were given a dictate by Sony, like, hey, you know that PSN thing? Like, y'all should be using that. We kind of pointing at the watch, like, you know, hey, told you. Where's that PSN money we're supposed to be getting somehow TikTok. Or whatever, right? We should be getting people logging in all the time from this very popular game.
We need more people so we can leak their info.
Right. People understandably have reticence to give PSN their money, given what has happened to PSN in, you know, even
buddy,
short memory.
It's not even just PSN. I got a letter today from AT&T. It's like, hey, we leaked your info last month. Do you want a year of credit monitoring or something?
I'm going to make a semi-safe prediction here and say that all of us will be dead before the back-to-back credit monitoring that we are offered for our information being leaked stops.
Can I stop having it concurrently and maybe just start lining them up back-to-back?
Yeah, just send me a voucher.
Yeah.
Just extend to the current one, please.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, you know, people, besides this, right, just that already, making another account is already bad enough. The next thing is that, hey, and I don't think I even realized this when this was kicking off. Do you know PSN only supports certain countries?
I did not realize that. Well, or do only certain countries allow PSN?
I guess I don't know the difference, but I don't see why that has to be a problem when Steam and Microsoft have no issue working in many of these countries.
Okay, okay. So it must be a PSN issue, right?
The thing that happens, right? Steam is available in, I don't think it's every country, but it's nearly every country around the world.
Mm-hmm.
PSN is not. And so if you are required to log in to PSN to play this game, if you cannot legally create a PSN account in your country,
yeah,
you are up the creek.
Yeah. The problem here comes from having sold the game through Steam without PSN required and then Bingo. Requiring it, right?
And the thing is that, like, obviously it was proven. And then the statement that Sony makes, you know, and to be clear, the statement comes from Sony, is that, well, we want to use these PSN logins to prevent hackers and increase security, which everyone is already like, what? Hacking has not been labeled a problem in a PvE game, mostly.
Yeah. One of the reasons the developers said they don't want it to be PvP is they're like, you know what? Communities are hard enough. PvE at least keeps us sort of pointed at the same goal. I mean, Helldivers still is having a problem with, like, really bad manner people, team killing, and people getting booted from games right before extract. And that alone is a problem. Forget it. If you were allowed to, like, have PvP, it would just, yeah. No,
which,
no
I mean,
fun.
To be clear, PvP is enabled. You can just shoot your friends in this game.
You gain nothing.
You gain nothing, right? As opposed to, like, a dedicated PvP mode where you would earn something, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, Sony's comment immediately rings hollow when they're like, oh, this will increase security and you know, whatever. Protect the sanctity of the PSN, you know, which everyone is like immediately like BS alarms ringing. And then they're like, so, you know, and then you just create this account and you jump in there. No big deal. Very easy. Or link up the one that you probably already have, gamers. And people were like, well, clearly that's BS. We've been playing this game for months just fine without any of this. So, like, what's the deal? And then, you know, it turns out that the only way for people in certain countries to create a PSN account is to use a VPN, which, by the way, people found out by doing will get you banned from PSN. PSN does not allow you to use a VPN to create accounts. Apparently, they're, like, quite savvy at detecting when people are doing that. Or, like, break the TOS of PSN to sign up for in a country that you don't live in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you are, like, illegally creating an account and then hoping, like, by the benevolence of Sony that they don't ban you to play a game that you clearly could play for fine, or, like, play just fine before this. And so people got really mad.
Yeah.
You know, probably more people than this actually did affect, but, you know, there are a lot of people in this situation. You know, we're talking, like, I didn't realize how many it was. There was, like, a list of over 130 countries this affects.
Wow.
And, you know, hard to know how many people in those countries bought the game or whatever, but, like, entire markets, like, in the Middle East and Africa are just, like, completely unsupported by PSN, apparently, which I found shocking, honestly.
Huh.
And so then after like one of the most targeted review bombing campaigns that I've ever seen, Valve stepped in and was like, okay, fine, we're going to waive the time limits for refunds here. And anyone who has played it any amount of time can just request a refund.
Insane.
And they started doing that and people started refunding it. And all of a sudden the music changes. what if we don't do this, actually? We're sorry, gamers. And, you know, that kind of stuff comes out.
Yeah. Well, it sucks because it's clearly Arrowhead does not care about the PSN. They waited this long to implement, and it was like the Sony hammer came down and ruined their game.
Yeah. And the CEO has been, like, on Reddit and posting on their Discord and stuff saying, like, I didn't do this. I didn't want this. I was told to do this, so we did it, right? They said jump. We said okay, right?
Yeah, they wrote all the checks. We had to do it.
Yeah, you can't say no to your publisher, right? They come with the money. You have to say yes.
Yeah.
And so they did it. People got mad. They were like, see, we told you so. And the executive people were like, oh, it's the gamers. You know, they'll get over it. It's fine. They didn't get over it. And then all of a sudden, the bottom line was affected. And then they listened.
Amazing.
So, good to see the, you know, the resolution, at least it for once, if something in a pro-consumer direction.
We're always pro-consumer here. Although, you know, all it gets us is free credit monitoring.
Yeah.
Well, some changes that will be coming that you don't need free credit monitoring for. JJ, have you heard the immense, gargantuan overhaul that is coming for Diablo 4 next week?
What now?
Yeah.
I know they've been talking about a big thing, and then I'm just not paying any attention.
Okay, well, they've extended Season 3, which is great for me because I still have yet to finish the story of Season 3. It's been a while. Bellatro, we'll talk about, has taken over my life entirely. Along with catching up on COTC. However, that's not talking about Diablo 4. Diablo 4 decided that all the itemization and the way that affixes work and the way the Codex of Power works and all that stuff was really ornery and stupid.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yes, I agree. Nodding my head.
So what if we just cut down the loot by like half and you didn't need items anymore to bring your Codex of Power stuff over? And so once you disenchant a Codex of Power, you know, type power, the best version of the one you've disenchanted is just in your Codex to use forever from then on.
That seems positive, I would say.
What if you didn't need tons and tons of items from the blacksmith to do enchanting? What if those items you still do need from the blacksmith for enchanting were like a lot easier to get? What if we just dropped the world tier for each hardness of item to get? So like Sacred could come in world tier 3 and didn't show up in world tier 4 to ruin your day?
Nodding, yes, yes, yes.
What if we added like a new system for crafting at the blacksmith through reusable items called tempering, where you just get manuals kind of like in World of Warcraft, and then you can just do stuff and add affixes to items.
That's cool. Like, so like you get a item with only like one kind of bad affix, and then you can like go back and pay some whatever and make more.
And just like, oh, 30% bone spirit size. Yeah, sure. I'll take that instead of this thing that is not useful for necromancer.
Whatever I got, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What if they added what was that thing that we used to do? The level dungeons in Diablo 3 where you just kept going down, see how far you could get?
Oh, yeah. What were those things in Diablo 3? I forget what you call them. I know what you're talking about.
Rifts. Mm-hmm. Rifts. What if we added rifts back into the game, but called them something different? Kind of like...
Nightmare Dungeons were kind of already rifts, right?
Because they're Nightmare like, Dungeons. Yeah, Nightmare Dungeons, too. Yeah.
Because it was always kind of like you would just pick a... They have a level range, and then you would have like affixes and whatever applied to the dungeon, and then you'd go through, you know, some other random dungeon that already exists. But
specifically
with, like,
doing this,
whatever.
Specifically doing this doesn't give you just bad loot the whole time. It gives you like stuff for the artificers in the game, so you can go turn okay loot into great loot.
I love that.
Overhauled
my understanding
Helltides.
Of the current. Yeah, good. Good.
What if Helltides were like useful and had adjustments to them so that like you wanted to do them?
Well, they can say that, but that was their thought to start with, and it didn't really work out. So
every aspect is getting reworked. Almost every the pages for this go on and on and on and on.
I mean, look, I'm here.
Diablo 4 is getting a major overhaul.
I'm here for it. You and I both know, after having played a decent amount of that game, It needed some work.
It was a pitiless loot grind of a game.
And to be clear, you and I also both remember, if we cast our minds back long, long ago in the before time, before you had kids, Diablo 3.
Oh boy.
You know, remember? Uh-huh. Remember back then?
Diablo 3?
Do you remember when Diablo 3 originally came out?
Yeah, I went to the release. It was like May of 2012.
And you remember playing that original game? That original game kind of sucked, dude.
Auction houses?
Yeah, of real money auction houses. The like best things you could find in the game were just yellows. Mm-hmm. Like the legendaries were actually like actively bad.
Yeah.
And you know, the game that Diablo 3 became that we eventually loved playing a bunch was after many updates, right?
It was, about a year worth of updates before they were like, this is the game now.
And they fixed everything. They added all the, like, seasonal systems where the set armors and all that stuff came in later. Yeah. It was, like, way, way better. Now, maybe this is the moment they turn the corner on Diablo 4 and make it into a fun game? Question mark?
Diablo 4 started off better. I mean, they were starting
to be clear, it wasn't
fun. No, right? It wasn't.
The story is fun. Like, you have a good time, but the end game of that game is not exciting to play.
I did not go with my seasonal character onto the normal realm and keep leveling. I just stopped. Right? Yeah. I just stopped. Yeah. It's not fun enough to keep going after the season, currently.
The only thing that has kept me playing Diablo 4 when I play it at all is because my wife wants someone to go with her into dungeons and stuff, and now I'm becoming the drag because I'm not playing enough, and so like I'm level 36 you're and she's 57 back. Or whatever, and it's like not good.
And speaking of Diablo 3, one of the funniest notes I saw in these changes that are coming is they're going back to the old gem system. They're getting rid of like half the levels of gems.
Good. There are too many
gem levels are becoming automatic according to your character level.
Good.
And all that BS stuff that was in there, like adjusting the encounter rate or whatever these stupid things did. Well, no, that one just does intelligence. That one just does strength. That one just does,
it wasn't broke. Why did you fix it? You know?
Uh-huh.
They did some cool stuff in some of the seasons where they added gems that did like weird effects and stuff. Those were interesting, but they were also impossible to find unless you were like grinding some of the harder bosses that dropped them.
Yeah.
But other than those, it was like, I don't know, put the one that gives you armor or the one that gives you HP in everything, and then that's probably fine.
Man, it wasn't broke. Why did you fix it? Is the story of this podcast going forward. Because the next three items on my list... One, I want to know Michael's opinion on these three things to start with, and then because I think they'll set us up for success in discussing them. Michael.
Okay.
Why do people want digital license plates?
For the same reason that people want the Cybertruck?
Wait. Why are we talking about the incel like Camino? I'm confused.
Oh, God. I don't understand them. And yesterday I didn't understand it even more. I saw a digital license plate and it had the dealer. Like when you buy your car now, you get a paper plate before you get your real plate.
Right. Yeah.
It had a paper plate on the digital plate.
You mean it was the dealer number as opposed to the like
correct
standard license?
So not only did this person want a digital plate, they wanted it before they could even get a real license plate and put it into it.
I mean, you know why that is. That part is the DMV bureaucracy. That part is obvious, right?
Okay.
Like, why was it the paper plate or the paper plate number as opposed to the real one? The better question is, why do you need a digital one in the first place? What
they
is
require
even the point?
A subscription.
They're insane.
You have to
I've
pay
read about these. They're stupid.
To own them.
What does it get you? Like why?
Nothing. Nothing.
You have to charge it.
Yeah. Because it's not connected to the car. Because if it was, it would turn off when the car turns off.
No, that seems like intelligent design. We're not going to do that.
I don't understand. I was driving around.
Because they have to be able to ticket you if you're parked somewhere, right? So, like, they can't have it. It has to stay on, right? Never mind. Let's, like, not talk about, like, e-ink displays or any of those kinds of things that could just, like, kind of stay super low power. You could power them with a tiny battery for, like, 100 years. It's fine. Ignore all that.
No, no, it has to have tons of battery because these things are, wireless. They have a wireless signal in them transmitting data on you. At all times.
Yeah, which absolutely couldn't be hacked.
Not that your car may not be doing that already. You mentioned
your car is
Tesla.
1,000% doing it. All manufacturers, by the way. Like, car location data is like some of the most Wild West data stuff that exists. It's insane. It gave me the fear, dude. Like, it's out there.
We're all going to get letters from Hyundai and Ford. And your information is leaked, and unfortunately, we're providing you credit monitoring and a bodyguard.
You wish, nope, man.
We're just going to go into business making Faraday cage wraps for cars.
For the stuff we put in the car.
But then your navigation system won't work, Michael. You have to make the navigation system work.
It doesn't matter because I don't pay for the subscription for my navigation system.
They don't care if you pay for that. They're just checking on your engine, bro. Don't worry. They're also recording exactly everywhere you go. But they're just checking on your engine. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's bad out there.
Michael, you're up. Round two.
That's one.
Yeah, that's one. Round two. Are you ready?
This one
is in response to something you sent.
Uh-oh.
How does the flat pastry exist?
Oh, are we talking the flat croissant?
The flat croissant.
I don't... This one just kind of pains me.
Explain it to the people.
It
came from New York, I'm sure.
I don't even remember what city I saw that it started in. But yeah, so it's a croissant in two dimensions.
It doesn't have any of the
fluffy middle part that makes a great croissant a great croissant, right? You need that good crispy outer crust, and you need the fluffy middle part. This looks like someone pulled all the crust out and then ironed it. Like the after gag in a Wile E. Coyote bit.
Do you think that they did it with like day-olds?
No, I was just going to ask that. It's not a flattened croissant. It's cooked that way.
It is.
Are they just selling you phyllo dough?
I mean, that's kind of what it looks like. It's
badly cooked croissants. It's like they just didn't cook it good enough to fluff up.
It's like, JJ, do you want brownies? Would you be happy if when you said yes, I gave you just one long edge piece cut out
from
the entirety of the tray?
Hold on. I wrote this part down. Hold on. I wrote the brownie pan down when we were going to talk about this subject. Okay, because
before we go there, let's discuss physics. There is no such thing as only a two-dimensional object in our three-dimensional world. But what you are saying is it's very flat, right?
It's cooked
and
very
so
flat.
Like, it is very
it,
flat.
Is it the thickness of the outside of a regular croissant, or which is like paper thin, right? Like very, very flat. Or is it like slightly thicker because they've smashed a regular croissant down into the folding bin or something?
No, it's like paper thin.
So you're getting a third of a croissant in the shape of a croissant.
Right.
Yeah, and paying twice the price.
It's apparently you feed it through a machine that like presses and cooks it at the same time.
Oh my God.
And to answer your question, Andy, I looked back at the article I sent you, Koreatown.
K-Town in L.A.?
It's in our backyard.
Oh, no. Well, L.A. is often equally to blame for atrocities for food.
I can't understand why. Who looked at a croissant and was like, the best part is the flat outside, not the fluffy middle? Like, who says this?
I don't know, because then you can't stuff it with anything.
Right. Where's my chocolate?
Is it doesn't fit the theory that we have, the working theory of this podcast, of if you change the function of the food, it's no longer the food. The function of a pastry is to be large, light, fluffy, have a structured interior, and possibly be able to be filled, right? And so while you change a brownie by using the all-corner pan, right, you don't change the physical structure of a brownie. Brownies have crust. You're just adding more crust.
Right. We're just talking about surface area with that pan.
So, right? Michael brought up if you got only the long side of the brownie, right? I guess maybe if you literally only got the crust, some sort of millimeter thin piece of crust of brownie, and then they called it a flat brownie, that probably wouldn't count anymore. Okay.
First of all, Andy, they'd call it a flownie.
Oh, no, God. That's the name of the episode. Episode 400, flownie. I'm going to spell it with
every day we are further from God's light. Every day.
This is the worst possible timeline.
The flownie. The worst possible time. I want to... Maybe can we say out loud that that's TMR copyright registered trademarked to Michael?
Like, absolutely.
Can we say that now so that if someone invents when someone invents the flownie and they're driving around in their Cybertruck videoing it while the car drives itself into a wall, can we get paid from that?
Time stamped and dated. We invented it here.
Flownie 5/6/2024. To the death of the universe.
Captain's log.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, Michael.
I don't know how we even do a third one after that, but let's hear it.
I want to know how you feel about, and I'm going to have to describe it to you unless you've already heard of it.
Okay.
Pretendo.
You're going to have to tell me.
Okay.
I like the sound of it, but I want to hear details.
Nintendo recently took offline the Wii, DS, Wii U, 3DS online functionality.
RIP, yep.
For all games.
RIP Street Pass.
No more connecting to Street Pass to do stuff through the internet at web, which is one of the big things that was listed when they brought out Pretendo. Pretendo is apparently a fan creation version trying to replace the servers for those games.
Okay, a noble project.
How long before they get a DMCA?
Ooh. Considering that Nintendo just got a whole bunch more emulator accounts shut down, they issued like 8,500 takedowns.
Oh yeah, this is the last week. You're talking about the clones of what was it
clones
called?
Of Yuzu specifically.
Yuzu,
which had already gotten taken down. So you can't be that surprised when your clone of a thing that got taken down gets taken down.
They just went to GitHub and they were like that one, that one, that one, that one, that one, that one.
GitHub tracks where you branched your thing from, dude. It's not like GitHub didn't know. So you know,
yeah.
Pretendo is not open to the public yet. I don't know if they're trying to talk to Nintendo yet about letting them replace the Nintendo network somehow. I don't know how you would do it, how you would connect your device without hacking your device, which is eventually going to cause Nintendo to show up.
I mean, the answer is the internet and traffic data on the internet is public. You can just use tools and see what kinds of packets are going across there.
Yeah.
So depending on what Nintendo was doing with those packets, if you can figure out how that worked, you can emulate whatever it was doing. That part is not illegal, right? The thing that's illegal is if they are encrypting stuff and you're breaking their encryption using secret knowledge, magic numbers or whatever, right?
That's what people got in all
that is the thing that gets you in trouble. Mm-hmm. So if you say, well, if you have a Nintendo that transmits unencrypted data, we have a thing that responds to your unencrypted data with other unencrypted data, and then it will work.
How would you get those to connect? Do either of you know how that would work?
The way it would work is you supply your own encryption key and force it to be used on both ends, right?
I see.
So if you have the encryption key that your thing uses, right, which is secret, made by Nintendo, but you have it, then you tell the thing that they're using, here's the encryption key, use this, then they can talk together, right?
Right.
But they can't come with any of that information or any idea about what to do about that unless you provide it, because it's illegal for them to break that encryption.
Well, they say they currently have the Friends for 3DS and Wii U up and running, and that's about it.
It's cool that someone's doing it, though, because, like, you know, Nintendo said, like, hey, we're discontinuing this. So, like, why not let people go to town and make stuff? Nintendo's not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be weird to see when they bring online the account server, whether that will then stand, because that'll have some sort of Nintendo type information. Or unless you're going to have to recreate different network accounts or something through Pretendo.
I do not know how that would work.
Very funny to me that these open source things that are like donor funded can just exist and be fine, and Nintendo can't manage to keep things running.
These donor funded things only have to be paid for by very few people, right? As opposed to Nintendo has to run one for every 3DS that exists or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, it's certainly the case that Nintendo could have kept like a couple servers online and for very little money, and the seven people that are still using their DS would have been fine, right? But
yeah,
it's not how corporations work, right?
Sounds like those DMCAs basically proved that the Switch 2 will somehow be backwards compatible, since we have yet to talk about the Switch 2 on this podcast.
When there's actually something confirmed, I think we will certainly talk about it. But until then, it's like speculation.
We don't draw many lines, but I feel like delving into wholly unsubstantiated rumors is one we are loath to cross.
Yeah, I think there's more than unsubstantiated rumors at this point, where
that's true.
You know,
I think they have already accidentally leaked games.
Yeah,
it's that, like, news just broke over the weekend.
You know, like Walmart Venezuela or whatever, one of those kinds of things has happened before. So, like, there's stuff that people know that's out there, but we're just waiting on Nintendo to say for real what's going on. But,
well, the big theory was that the big theory was backwards compatibility was getting the chop thanks to Yuzu and everybody else, but I guess they went a different route.
Sure are a lot of people with Switches out there. Sure, it would be nice if they could play the games they already have.
Yeah, it sure would. It sure would. Games that we already have, JJ?
Mm-hmm.
What's the one? What's the only game that matters?
Right. It's time to talk about Aiden Chronicles, 100 Heroes.
I was going
to
say we're all in.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good.
No, it sounds like we're talking about some Balatro again. Which I should say, make it sound
again.
Like I should make it sound like I'm sad. I'm not. That new patch hit, and I've been back.
That new patch hit, and I thought after the first run, Michael, that there was no chance that anything had changed. It was horrible. I was never going to win.
Yeah, you got to tell me, because I listened to last week's episode, and Balatro was on the outs.
Balatro was on the outs. I did something I didn't want to do this week. In fact, today, I did it. Yeah. I admitted that maybe I just don't have the time and energy to go through enough numbers to find out why I'm not winning on Purple Stake.
You looked at data?
I looked at data.
What is this? I thought this is a gambling game, Andrew. I'm very disappointed.
I looked at data, and by the second page of data, JJ, it was very clear there's a build that we can all do where you will get a lot of points.
I do like points.
What if you made most of your deck out of, let's say, like, steel jacks with poly on them?
How does one do this?
You'd have something like Blueprint sitting next to DNA and then play a Steel Jack and get two more Steel Jacks with 1.5 Molt on them. And then you do that every single hand, Steel Jacks with 1.5 Molt on them, Steel Jacks with 1.5, until basically your hand is Steel Jacks with 1.5 Molt on them, and then you get two Jokers with two extra cards per hand, so you have four extra cards in your hand, and you've got the thing that replays the first card played, and you've got a times 3 for all your upgraded cards in your deck, and you've got times 9 because you have so many steel cards in your deck for the steel cards Joker.
You say, like, this is something we can all do, but you mean I went on this one insane run, and I would love if it was possible to ever recreate this in a million years, but it's not.
That's what I heard you say. I think it's possible because I drove this one all that way past Ante 12 when I was hitting 10 billion chips a hand.
That's a lot of chips. I worry to inform you that you may have peaked, though, and you will never be able to do this again.
So, you can do it again. Because I took the theory, and I took it to a white stake run to see if I could do all the quote-unquote impossible feats of strength, like getting $400 or getting 5 wilds for a flush, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, if you can build enough off of high card, you can kind of do anything at low stakes.
I think it's clear, once you've played at high stakes any amount, you could win every run at low stakes without trying too hard. I think my question for you is, how do you seem to have this strategy to manufacture this insane situation, but how do you make that strategy happen? You can't force those Jokers to show up.
No, you can't force the Jokers.
Runs.
You concede runs, but if you can get some of the Jokers working, you can stay alive long enough for the other Jokers to show up. And you're not going to hit them all, and you won't make it to Ante 12 every time. There's no way to do it perfectly and reinvent it on the run. But essentially, the way people are hitting these insane numbers is if you are playing big hands, the problem is that early on in the game, especially with no Jokers, right, when we all had like 10 Jokers, we were having to play flush, 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 five cards every single time to try and get past the antes.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to be more patient. Now you really got to try and force the deck to work off of one card because you need all those other cards, the held in hand cards, to be held in hand. That's really how you get the engine working. If you can get through with a pair, that's the way to do it.
Sure. I guess the question I have is, like, all of this relies on using DNA and Blueprint to be able to force copy tons of cards into your deck, right?
Turns out I didn't even hit DNA and I made it to like Ante 12 white stake just by roughly incorporating the same theory into a money deck. I was only playing pairs. Only pairs. The entire way.
Interesting. So you really got to focus in on pair levels and pair
high
Jokers
high card
and stuff early.
Yep. You get the molt to get you alive, and then you work on the theory of, okay, this is a money run, so I'm alive, and I'm alive with playing low cards. Now I need to work on the money run. So, oh, there's bull. Okay, now I got invisible Joker. Now I'm going to double bull. So now I have two bull. Oh, there's bootstraps. Okay, now I can start dropping my molt cards and start working on money cards. And all the while trying to stay alive only on low card things, so that when you start making gold cards and you start copying gold cards, you're holding cards in hand that are giving you more and more and more and more money.
More and more money. I get it. Okay.
So you don't just do steel cards, right? But the idea of trying to hold cards, right? So like, okay, now that gold card has a blue seal on it. Now that gold card has, you know what I mean? So you can apply the theory past just steel card run.
I mean, it can be any kind of upgrade, right? You could be red seals. It could be...
Mm-hmm. Well, for red seal, then you need to be focused in on what card you're playing, right? So my red seal goes on my glass king with 1.5 with polychrome with poly on it. So then it retriggers itself. It gives me times five before I even go in to having all the jacks or whatever. If you can do it with aces, aces are literally the perfect card because then you won't lose your run. Like I lost my run on anti 12 at the end when I couldn't reroll the Joker because I hadn't hit that voucher yet, and all face cards were debuffed and my entire deck was sad.
Owned.
Yeah. So all it was like I felt like I had been sitting in the room, Michael, with True Detective, and he'd been talking at me for 36 hours.
And okay. Yeah.
And I walked out of there and I just sat down and finally was like, I see now. I see what he's saying. You know? I felt like a crazy person, and then it worked like within one run.
For a minute, it sounded to me like you were Charlie pointing at the whiteboard with the red string.
It does. I was worried there. It does feel like it, doesn't it? But the theory applies when you think about what you're working on. So if I'm making a money deck, okay, well then everything's got to be either gold cards or whatever, right? Like, and I need to be playing low, so I'm making more and more money.
Yeah. So I think I get this. And this strategy, and it makes perfect sense for me and how it could work at low stakes. The thing that I don't understand is how
you can...
I beat
purple stake with it.
So maybe I need to try this at low stakes and learn, because I don't understand how I could get enough mult and enough hands to get me through the like first two antis playing single cards.
The thing
cards.
Is, you don't... Yo, the first two antis are survival. That's it. You just have to get cards and get jokers and survive.
Okay, because like the first like you know the first two rounds are you could probably go straight to the first boss without playing the first two hands. Like
it's pretty hard. 600's pretty hard, man.
But you can do it, right? It's not impossible. 450 you could do every time, right? You should be able to get 450 with the discards that you get from the start with nothing. I think that's doable almost always. But you know, the 600 you want to have one joker with like any amount of mult, basically, and you're fine. And then from there, you got to have some stuff. Like, you can't just not have some stuff. You will lose for sure in the next couple rounds if you don't have, like, serious multipliers or big chip additions.
Yeah, it's true. You have to get enough stuff to survive. But
here's my question then. So now I'm in survival mode. I've gotten a few jokers to do something.
Okay.
How do I make it so that I can play a single card and not lose? Because that's the issue, is that those other jokers and stuff that I have require me to do other things in order to activate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I make it so I play the one card and then I get 1,000 points or 5,000 or 8,000 to get me out of the round?
Yeah. It doesn't advance as fast as you think it does once you have a few of the pieces, right? Mm. And I'm not sure the money deck would have held up as well at higher stakes. I would have to try it again at a higher stake.
The problem with the money deck idea, which again is not a problem, the problem is that the money is harder to get at the higher stakes, right? So
absolutely,
because there's that whole blind where you don't get any money anymore, basically.
Which is why I chose low stakes to try and get my $400.
And 400%. But if you're saying that the process works, right, regardless, ignoring the money side of it, right, but like there are using this idea to like pump pairs or high card or whatever, right? The question I have is then how do you get that, you know, how do you transition from needing to play three of a kind or a pair or whatever the like low hand you have is to playing these small hands?
Yeah. I wish I had recorded. I wish I had recorded it because I was playing it on the deck. And so I actually sent you a recording of my like later run when I'm just playing one jack.
Okay, I'll take
what what ends up happening with the blueprint and all the other cards, and as you move stuff around and all that sort of stuff, you can see how they interact at a very end game level. But at the beginning of the thing, it was literally like, okay, survive by creating. You don't have to worry about the smaller hands as horrifically until you have things that are triggering, right? So, like, if you get, what is it, Supernova, that starts to track how many times you've played a hand, then you'll start to benefit from playing the hand, right? You don't need to plan ahead of time as much as possible. But, like, I had things that were triggering off pair. It's the common jokers.
Right, right.
And then Ceremonial Knife shows up. Okay, well, now I've got Ceremonial Knife. So I'm just trying to gain molt. And I'm just going to survive off gaining molt. And then Blueprint shows up.
Buy whatever joker exists and just keep sacrificing it, right?
Right, exactly. So find something that iterates higher as best you can. Something that gives you 10, 20 molt. And then start playing those pairs. And then you got to focus in hard on whatever can get you to give you cards in your hand to hold that give you bonuses or, you know.
So like gold that turns your cards to gold when you play them or with the steel one or.
Mm-hmm. Stone cards are very helpful too because they don't count against high card, which you're leveling with planet.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna go play some more Balatro after this, which I was gonna do anyway, but I'm gonna do that now.
And it'll get much easier than it was for me because I accidentally used Invisible Joker and it duplicated something that gave me negative one hand. So I ended up just running out of possible hands to play. So if I can only hit 11 billion in one turn, I can't beat a $40 billion stake.
Sure. Yeah.
And you just run out of space that you can make, right? Like at a certain point. It's just harder and harder and harder, but it worked. It worked. The theory works.
I think the game does not scale infinitely, right? Like there must be some optimal maximum amount that you can get. I bet it's very, very, very high, but like, I don't think it scales infinitely.
Yeah.
Although maybe somehow if you can do all of this with negative, you could, but well, I think the problem would then be like hand size.
Hand size definitely limited me in my win. Or in my loss there at the very end. But, you know, if you could negative a whole bunch of stuff, and then there's a second joker called, like, Napkin or something like that, that is another blueprint. And it works with blueprint. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either. But it works with blueprint, so if you can get both of them, then you're, like, tripling down on a single card, which can be insane.
Yeah, Blueprint is one of the most powerful jokers that exists. I was so sad in a run I was playing where I had a decent build going. I think I was doing two pairs or something. And like my build was starting to scale pretty good. I had a lot of stuff, but I had to re-roll pretty hard early on, so my money was not very high. And a negative blueprint came up in the shop.
Too expensive.
Too expensive.
That happens to me
and
so much.
I was like, I wanted to die. Never going to see a negative blueprint ever again. And it was like, oh, the best joker with the best like effect on it. It was like $20 or something. I did not have $20. And like, I couldn't sell. Like, I would have to cripple myself to buy it. And then I wouldn't have the pieces I needed to keep. Ah, the worst. So annoying.
Yeah. Speaking of the worst and so annoying, I have to thank you both for getting me through my last two EX5 towers this past weekend.
Hey, feels good to close the book on that one.
But the book has started to... I'd started to write many things in the book due to not wanting to play Octopath Traveler Champions of the Continent. Because of things like that, where it feels like it's going to take forever to figure out how to beat something. And while it isn't actually forever, it might be an hour or two. An hour or two these days is difficult when you don't know that you're going to succeed at the end of it.
The thing that is so life-changing about beating those towers for the first time is you get that 30% accessory.
Yeah.
Bro, it helps a lot in there. And then next time when you beat those things, it is so much easier.
Yeah, and Long going to beat somebody up with a staff now.
There you go.
And actually, I have now found the like ones that I have started doing a lot. Like, I can do Hunter EX5 like almost with my eyes closed at this point.
How many turns does that take?
Not that many.
Interesting. Maybe I'll care once they introduce the quality of life of just beating the whole tower when you beat EX5.
Yeah, it's like 10 or 15 turns, maybe. It's not that long. You know, I have gotten a lot of powerful hunter units at this point.
Yeah, and that, like, one's a real formulaic fight.
Yeah, it's like they summon adds at one point at a certain HP threshold. Ooh, they summon different adds, and they are only weak to elemental attacks. And if you have guys that just have some elemental attacks, it's no problem. Like, don't only use bow, you're fine. Like, and then you're good, right? Like, AoE elemental, and then some guys that can crit. Bro, all the hunters have auto crit abilities. It's not a problem. Like, this is very easy. That one in particular, I do every week. And then I just use all the extra shards to buy, like, the soul coins or whatever and trade them in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, not all of them are like that. Like, I'm not doing cleric ever again if I can avoid it.
Yeah, warrior.
Warrior is super annoying.
Just so tedious.
Thief is easy, but it takes forever. Dancer takes forever. Merchant also takes forever, but is not, like, the worst.
I actually had a decent time with Merchant, to be honest, and it probably would go even easier now that I have the accessory.
Yeah, it's just long, right? Like, the issue is not it's hard, it's just long. And, you know, that's the gateway there. But, like, you know, some of the other ones have started to get, frankly, not that bad. Again, Thief is also not that bad. It just takes forever, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, as power creep should, right?
Yeah, definitely if you have some of the, like, elite units for some of those things, they start getting quite a bit easier, right? Like, I know Merchant would be very easy if you had What's-His-Face and the other guy.
Leon Krauser and Roland.
Yeah. No, not Krauser.
Leon.
Oh, Leon and Roland. Leon and Roland, yeah.
Well,
Krauser probably doesn't hurt, but yeah.
Krauser's pretty good. I'm down to, I don't know if you guys have checked your inventory lately, but I'm down to putting Largo and Hammy into hunt teams because I'm out of characters to level.
Yep, already I'm doing
pretty
that.
Pretty much there too. Yep.
Yeah,
I have some of those 4 stars that I couldn't get for a long time because the ads were broken on Apple. Are still leveling. My pickups from the Arune and Elrica. Those are still leveling, but that's it.
Oh, yeah. I rammed Elrica to 100 for my team for this last story chapter.
Oh, really? Why?
She's friggin' broken, dude.
She's built really well for the fights.
Oh, that's why they released her, I guess.
Having attempted all the fights that Michael has attempted in that final boss, man, wish I had that unit. She has, like, all the skills that you wish you had in some of those fights.
Interesting. Very frustrating. I have picked the story back up, but I'm a chapter behind. I just felt so much relief when I was able to get through the thing. You know, I just haven't felt able to do some of the stuff recently, and I know that I'm staying free to play, and I just hope I'm not falling behind in the story stuff, and stuff was taking a lot, like, longer.
There's some good rewards in those other chapters, too. Like, there's, like, a couple of accessories that are pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, just playing through the main story.
I like
Make
that
sure
they
you get, like, all the random, the, like, boxes and stuff some of those places.
I like that I don't need to level all the weapons to 4. Like, you know, in previous ones it was like level them all the way up. Now it's kind of like, just level the new ones to 4.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness, right? You can level those old ones to 4. The benefit you get is that you get 30% damage against the heaven enemies instead of only the heck enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice, but it costs a lot of money, and it's like, you know, do you need, like, that one extra sword to hit the feet? Okay, sure, level one of those, right? But, like, otherwise,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope they don't add more feats, because I don't want to go back. Do it.
They have not so far. And the last, it actually is kind of tidy, the last story chapter closes out the armor feats for the headgear and the body armor, and it also closes out the unexplored places on the map feat.
Oh, wow.
With an even 300. I think it was 300.
Does JP add more? Or are they just made new stuff?
I don't know, because the next thing we really get is we get an epilogue to close out the story. We get some more of the divine beasts quests. But then we really get Celestia. I think that's the next big thing. So
wow. My guess is that when they move things to Celestia, they start like a new set of things and over completely.
Will. I'm sure they will.
Yeah. Well, they still have to release those two big characters.
Cigna and Cezantos. And then we get the Live Alive collab at the end of June, supposedly. Almost guaranteed.
I'm going to skip it.
That's fair.
I know Odio or whatever is supposed to be good, but I think I'm just
Diamond in a lot of rough on that banner.
Yeah, it sounds like. Yeah. Speaking of Diamond in a lot of rough, sometimes JJ documentaries are what you hope and sometimes they're not.
Uh-oh.
I watched and enjoyed but wondered why I had done it, The Pez Outlaw on Netflix, which is this is an interesting story about a guy that kind of changed the face of collecting in general. Went to Europe to get unique and limited Pez in an age before the internet. Quite fascinating. But ultimately, okay. I left and said, okay. But
yeah, that's kind of how I feel about that topic. But okay. Interesting, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. How did your documentary experience go?
I have an interesting connection to this documentary. So I know and I have met one of the people that is featured in this documentary. Sadly, he's no longer with us, but he is the father of one of my friends from college.
Oh.
And this documentary is on HBO Max or whatever the hell they call it these days. It's called The Synanon Fix. And how did the cure become a cult or something like that?
Okay.
It's a 4-part documentary, each an hour. And it's about Synanon. I don't know if you guys know anything about this.
Mm-mm.
It started in the 1950s as a rehab, basically, like shared living community for drug addicts. And it actually became relatively successful at breaking addiction by communal living and, you know, the people enforcing rules on each other to like keep each other sober and keep each other, you know, it had this whole method. And yeah, I'll let you watch the documentary if you want, but it became very popular and pretty good at doing that, you know, reforming these people's lives and then giving them work and giving them stuff to do, right? And like, you know, making a house and, you know, keeping a thing going, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it expanded and it expanded and eventually grew into a huge cult run by this crazy guy.
The dad of your friend is a crazy guy that ran a cult?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just checking. The dad of my friend doesn't feature until the very last episode, and he's one of the reasons the cult came down. He was a lawyer working in L.A. who was suing this cult to get someone released. Like, they had, you know, the person he was suing on behalf of had said that they'd imprisoned his brother or his girlfriend or whatever it was. And these people came to his house and left a poisonous snake in his mailbox.
Oh.
Okay.
And
nope. That'll get you thrown in jail.
They had taken the rattle off of it, so it didn't make noise. And it's one of those ones that you can just like get into from inside your house, you know? You don't have to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, yep. He had to be rushed to the hospital and anti-venom and all this stuff. Anyway, he survived. But, you know, the news was like, hello. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it became a whole thing. And eventually, you know, the cult unraveled for a whole bunch of reasons. Anyway, watch the documentary, I guess. But it was very interesting to learn about this. I had never heard of this cult, like, really, other than like, oh, this was a thing that he was involved in. And there were like newspaper articles and stuff about it from the time. But, you know, they interview people who were in it. The man himself is dead now, but he didn't really face any, you know, obviously all the like wealth and stuff that he accrued as part of this was taken away, but he didn't like go to jail or anything. It was never proven that he did any of this. There were people that did go to jail as part of this and they interview one of them. So it gets interesting at the end, but you know, they interviewed a bunch of the people as part of the cult and they talk about it and their experiences and what it was like and all this. There's a lot of video and stuff of it. So it's an interesting thing if you find the topic at all amusing.
Huh. All right.
It was an interesting
Pez,
time.
The Pez Outlaw was nothing heavy, let's say. There's a
bit heavier.
There's a subplot of thinking he's being followed by the president of Pez, which turns out maybe he was. I don't know. It's a little bit more feel-good than your story.
Yeah, this mostly, one's not so feel-good.
Mostly about, you know, how collecting can benefit and ruin lives, and at the end of the day, a lot of things work out if you're just passionate. But
yeah, man, I would say this is a case of people being much too passionate.
If you're passionate about podcasting, seek mental help.
Harsh.
If you're passionate about asking us questions, though,
You can send those to podcast@wewergamers.com. We set it up top. We'll say it again. podcast@wewergamers.com. That's the email address. Send it to us. And we're on social media. We are gamers out there. We're on YouTube. YouTube.com/@wewergamers. Put us on in the background, you know? Hit some likes. It's very easy.
Happy 400. I'm going to go flatten the cake.